Roto Grinders presents your first word in daily fantasy sports.
Let's go!
The Morning Grind. Stevie, TPFL, and company are here to jumpstart your analysis on today's DFS slate.
Let's go!
Without further ado, here's your host, Stephen Young.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Morning Grind podcast presented by RotoGrinders.com. I'm your host, Stevie TPFL. It's April 27th. We got a Wednesday slate here, 14 games tonight. So we're going to kind of bypass the early game here. We got a lot to talk about with this 14-game slate. As we're recording this podcast here around 11 Eastern, there's not really a big slate up for that early game. So just going to kind of avoid it today and talk about a lot of other stuff. And got a special guest here. The premium content director here at Roto Grinders, you guys know him as JM to Win. I know him as JM, and I know him as kind of like, hey, boss, what's up, man?
Yeah, that's been weird to get used to.
Yeah, but I feel like you're doing a great job, man. Like, the articles and the incentives this year, just so much better. Like, you know, the pitching article, it's probably my favorite thing to write. And I've wanted to do something like that for the last few years. So I'm so excited to, do it in the incentives this year.
Yeah, I love I love some of the article ideas we came up with. So, like, for anybody who's not a premium subscriber, one of the cool things about the pitching article is we have the writer do their endorsement at the bottom of it, which kind of makes the writer really think through who they want to put their name behind as the main guy they're backing that night. And we get some cool stuff in there because, you know, guys don't want to just pick the chalk. They want to kind of think through it and go off the board. So, I had a guy yesterday asking me on Twitter. He said, if I only have like an hour to do research each day, what research should I do? Which is a problem a lot of people have. And I was saying to him, read an article from somebody who does all the research for you, which is what we're kind of working on with the article. I have 4 days a week, and STL Cards has 3 a week, and Cheese is Good has 3 a week, where it's just research specific, really in depth. And that way, if somebody, you know, doesn't have the time to do 4 to 6 hours of research, we have these knowledgeable players who are doing 4 to 6 hours of research for them. So yeah, it's been really cool. It'll be fun to see kind of how things progress and what we come up with in other sports as well.
Yeah, man, I'm pumped about it. I know a lot of the readers, and just getting tweets and, you know, thank yous and stuff like that. It's great. And that's what we're here for. We're here to help people that are limited in time. And that's another thing this podcast is here for, you know, kind of get your research started off in the right spot. And game by game breakdown is what we're going to do. So that's what we're going to start with. And we're going to start it off with Philly at Washington. We got Gio Gonzalez, Jeremy Hellickson taking each other on here. What's your thoughts on these pitchers?
You know what? Honestly, if not for Bryce Harper, we could consider using Jeremy Hellickson because he's really good against right-handed batters. And he's been pitching well this year, but the danger of having to face Harper 3 or 4 times in there, if you have 1 or 2 guys on base, you really can't roster Hellickson is my take on it. What do you think there?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, Harper is enough to kind of warrant me away from a lot of pitchers against the Nationals this year. Like, I feel like we'll take our spots, but I feel like this matchup and how bad Hellickson is, you know, in general against lefties, I feel like Harper has a good chance to go home, you know, at least one home run off of him in this game. So for that reason, I'm with you. And I feel like, you know, Daniel Murphy's a guy that could hit some guys around as well. So for that reason, I'm not really on Hellickson in this game. And like I said, I like Harper and Murphy in this game.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's funny to say that about Harper. And, you know, we've been rostering pitchers against the Angels all year with Mike Trout, but Trout just has no protection in that lineup. Whereas Harper has so many good guys around him that it's not like you can just pitch around Harper and, you know, take your chances with everybody else. So yeah, that lineup top to bottom is really strong. And even though they're full of right-handed bats, that's just not a place I want to go. Gio Gonzalez, on the other hand, he may be the high-priced pitcher to use. Early weather reports have trouble in Chicago, a lot of rain. So if that happens and we can't roster Jake Arrieta, Gio Gonzalez is a really interesting place to look. I've been one of the people who never rosters Gio Gonzalez, but when he is facing these teams like the Phillies who swing at so many pitches, they end up swinging all these pitches out of the zone. I was looking tonight and and Gio's zone percentage is the same as it's always been, like 40%, which means he's out of the zone 60% of the time. But the Phillies have the third lowest walk rate in baseball. They're swinging early and often, and that's why they do well against a guy like Scherzer, who's always in the strike zone, and tend to struggle against a guy like Gio Gonzalez, who's always out of the strike zone. So I like Gio a lot today.
Yeah, I agree with you. 9,600. I feel like he's a good play in tournaments. Don't know if I'd necessarily play him in cash, but on an SP2 site, maybe you need a, you know, an SP2. I feel like then you could look at him in cash. I have my eyes set on one guy that we'll talk about here as we're going, but for the most part, I agree with you on Gio. I feel like this is a good spot. If he was going to get hit by one or two guys, would you agree that it's probably Franco?
Yeah. I've been so wrong on Franco this year. I rostered him several times waiting for the breakout game. And then did he double dong the other night?
He did.
Or did he just – okay, yeah. So that night I recommended him and then had him on my rosters. And then about an hour before game started, it was like, no, I'm going to wait till he has a big game before I jump back on board. So, yeah, I think Franco, even Darren Ruff isn't a bad guy to look to. I mean, I like the Phillies lineup more than most people do. They're, you know, bottom 10 in the league, but they're not like the worst lineup in baseball. But they are worse against lefties, and they do swing a ton. And I just, somebody who's out of the strike zone a lot, I'd much rather just use the pitcher than the hitters against him.
Yeah, I can get behind that. One other guy that I want to mention for tournaments that I like to target against lefties is Cameron Rupp. I love punting catcher. I hardly ever pay up a catcher, so he's only 2,300 on FanDuel. If he gets a good lineup spot, maybe fifth or sixth there, I think that he's a punt option. Not going to hit you probably a home run, but he's a guy that can get you a double, maybe RBI run scored. And at 2,300, you know, that type of production is something we can definitely look at. Any other thoughts before we move on to the Toronto game?
No, there's really not a ton to love at hitter in this game, and there's, you know, a decent amount to like at pitcher. And really, as we go through this slate, we'll see there aren't that many great pitchers to choose from today, and there's a lot of great spots for hitters. So I'm not going to go out of my way to try to force something in that game.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Chicago White Sox taking on the Toronto Blue Jays at Rogers Center. Marco Estrada, Jose Quintana. Quintana is a guy that's been usable, I guess, serviceable in his couple starts this season. What's your thoughts on these guys?
So I've been working on my article for today's slate, and I said in it that Quintana's not usually a guy we want to go out of our way to use batters against, but him pitching at Coors Field or at the Rogers Center might as well be Coors Field with that righty heavy lineup. This isn't a usual circumstance with Quintana. So I like Quintana a lot as a pitcher. He has good stuff. He does well against righties, not great, but he does well. But yeah, I mean, you can really, you can basically bank on one or two home runs from the Blue Jays. And, you know, there's upside for a lot more than that.
Yeah, I'm not on Estrada in this game. He has decent numbers. He's not a guy that I feel like is a bad pitcher, but I'm just not on him. I don't like targeting pitchers at Rogers Center. I feel like it's just not a good play. Do you have any thoughts on him before we talk about the bats?
With Estrada, it doesn't make sense. Anything he's done at the Rogers Center doesn't make sense because he's a fly ball pitcher without excellent strikeout stuff. But he tends to always put up a solid game. So I wouldn't – it was the same thing with Milwaukee when he was there. You know, it's a horrible park for a fly ball pitcher, but, you know, he does well. So I wouldn't take Estrada myself, but I wouldn't try to talk anybody off of him.
All right, let's talk about some of these Blue Jay bats. Donaldson against a lefty has been a thing for probably over a year now. I feel like he's, you know, an instant play here.
Yeah, he's definitely an instant put on your list, I'd say. We're also going to have Nolan Arenado at Coors Field against a lefty. And, you know, it's baseball. Anything can happen.
Of course.
To where you could get, you know, some differentiation from a cheaper third baseman maybe. But, yeah, I think Donaldson has to be at the top of your list right from the start.
Any thoughts else on, you know, there's just so much to talk about the Blue Jays, so I'll let you run with it here.
Yeah, I mean, What is there to say? You know, you have Jose Bautista, you have Edwin Encarnacion, even Troy Tulowitzki's been hitting the ball really well lately. So it's kind of one of those things where it's not like they're going to sneak by anybody. Obviously, they'll be lower ownership than Coors Field, but you kind of have to decide if you want to try to pick and choose your spots or go for the all-out stack, because, you know, most people are going to do one or the other. But if you go with the all-out stack, say five guys or four guys on FanDuel, you are going to get lower ownership at one or two spots than you would get most people will have. And then if you decide to pick and choose guys, then you just got to hope that you guess right and hope the other guys don't go off. But that's a viable strategy as well. If you can get, say, a double dong from Jose Bautista while Donaldson puts up, you know, a single and a run scored, then you pick up a lot of points from the people who went all in on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, fair points for sure. Any White Sox bats that you want against Estrada here?
I guess Jose Abreu as a fly ball hitter in a, you know, park that plays great to right-handed power. And I was on Todd Frazier on the Tuesday night slate. He's a very streaky hitter, and I like the way he's swinging the bat right now. So those are two guys I would look to. Obviously, Frazier has a ton of upside and is a great way to get some home run upside apart from Arenado and Donaldson. But I also respect Estrada as a pitcher, and so it's not something I want to go out of my way to do. But the White Sox lineup is pretty hot right now.
Yeah, Jose Abreu, 3,100, great price tag for upside, especially at first base where you want the upside, and it doesn't hurt to have cheap upside, and Jose Abreu has that at 3,100. Great ballpark, like you mentioned. Oakland at Detroit, Sonny Gray, Justin Verlander. Do you believe in this Sonny Gray guy?
I can't stand Sonny Gray. I absolutely can't stand him. He was like, what, third in Cy Young voting last year? It's ridiculous. Sonny Gray is kind of like a Zach Greinke in that he gets a lot more love from the DFS community than he really should because he's had some huge games. But he's basically a ground ball pitcher with average strikeout stuff. He's going to go seven or eight innings most games, but I never roster Sonny Gray.
Yeah, his price tag at FanDuel, 10.1K here on the slate. I feel like it's too high. The one thing that I think he has going for him, I feel like I'm going to stack some bats here against Verlander, and Gray might be in a position to get a win. And like you said, if he goes six or seven innings, gets the win, you know, he could be one of the top, what, three, four, five pitchers. But at 10-1, do you really want that top three or four, or do you want a guy that you have potential to be the number one guy? So I feel like his price has priced him out in this game. I'm not a big Sonny Gray person as well. I'll pick on him in spots, but I don't feel like this is a spot where I'm going to play him at his price tag. Any thoughts on Verlander? Like I said, I don't like him.
If it were against a team other than the Athletics, I really wouldn't mind it. He's pitched well his last couple games. He had a 305 xFIP against Cleveland, a 269 xFIP against Houston. And for any listeners who don't use xFIP, basically xFIP and Sierra are interchangeable. They're ERA predictors. And over time, you know, somebody's ERA is basically always going to fall in line with what their xFIP is. And actually somebody like Verlander, who's a fly ball pitcher, his ERA is usually going to be a little bit lower than his xFIP. So to pitch to a 305 or lower his last couple of games against good lineups in Cleveland and Houston isn't bad. I haven't gotten to watch either of those starts. I watched his first start this year and I thought he looked okay. But yeah, I don't think I'll go out of my way to pick on him, honestly. And with that said, I'm basically a one lineup guy most of the time. So I might have two or three lineups some nights, but I'm basically picking on my trying to put together my optimal team. So, with that said, I won't be going out of my way. If I were building 10 or 15 teams, I might throw in a stack against Verlander.
Yeah, I know some people don't like, you know, hot streaks, cold streaks, current form, all that stuff. I know a lot of people just like the stats, but I've watched Josh Reddick over the last few games, and he's swinging a really hot bat. He looks locked in at the plate, and 3,400 in the outfield. I like Reddick a lot here against Verlander.
My only concern with Reddick would be he does so much better against ground ball pitchers because of that uppercut swing he has. And so, he had, you know, Mike Pelfrey on Tuesday night. And who was it the other day that he had a huge game against? It was another, you know, finesse ground ball pitcher. So As a Red Sox fan, I'm still a big fan of Josh Reddick just as a player. And I always like getting him on my team. And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I kind of pay attention to, you know, if you can't just look at the numbers and say, okay, this guy's been 0 for his last 9, I can't use him. But if you watch a player, you can see who's locked in at the plate or who's swinging at bad pitches. It's like I rostered Curtis Granderson one night earlier this year when he'd had, you know, several bad games. And then after watching one at bat, I was like, what was I thinking rostering Granderson? Like, he looked so lost to play. And then, you know, once it clicked, he had several big games in a row. And you know, these guys are people. So it gets in their head the same way it does, you know, a DFS cold streak gets in a DFS player's head. So, yeah, I mean, I like Reddick. I'm always hesitant to use him against fly ball pitchers, probably to a fault. But, you know, watch him go hit 2 home runs against Verlander.
Yeah, I would be okay with that. You know, all right, so any bats that you want to target here?
I don't pick on Sonny Gray just because of how high the ground ball rate is. I think you could probably get a sneaky Miguel Cabrera. It was interesting tonight. I didn't see his ownership on the Tuesday night slate. I didn't see his ownership in all tournaments, but in a lot of places he was like 4 or 5% owned after his huge game. And obviously part of that is just respect for Rich Hill as a pitcher, but Miguel Cabrera at home against a lefty coming off a 2 home run game and being under 10% owned is just insane. So you can basically bank on him being super low owned against Sonny Gray. And, you know, he's Miguel Cabrera. He's not what he used to be, but he used to be, you know, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout. So it's not like he's a bad guy to have on your team against a quality pitcher who doesn't get strikeouts.
Yeah, I agree. Miguel Cabrera is a guy that, you know, I had him everywhere in that big game the other night. I played him on Tuesday night as well, just because I love him against lefties, but Rich Hill pitched really well in that game. You know, so all right, Baltimore at Tampa, Trop. We love targeting pitchers in the Trop. Matt Moore, Chris Tillman. I don't know about Chris Tillman, but I feel like Matt Moore has some upside in this game. What's your thoughts on Matt Moore and Tillman?
Man, could you use Matt Moore against the Orioles?
Could I? Yes. Yeah. Will I? Probably. You know, I love strikeout pitchers at Trop. Like, the ballpark, I've been to the Trop so much, you know, living here in Florida, but it's just a ballpark that it takes a lot to get it out of. And if we're looking at this lineup, you know, Machado's better against righties. A lot of these guys are better against righties. Adam Jones probably the one guy that I'm worried about, but I feel like Matt Moore, he looks really good this year.
Yeah, and Adam Jones kind of fluctuates too against how he does against left-handed pitching. He was bad for most of his career, and then when he was hitting next to Nelson Cruz, he had that huge year against lefties, and then I think he was bad last year against lefties too, wasn't he? It's kind of like unpredictable how he'll do. Yeah, I mean, Matt Moore, his Sierra has him as one of the, you know, top 20 or so pitchers in baseball this year, 25% strikeout rate versus lefties and righties. I just get so scared of that Baltimore lineup. And, you know, because of that, I missed out on Chris Archer the other day. So that can happen. But because of that, I also missed out on, you know, when Chris Archer had like 5 fantasy points against the Orioles. And it's different pitching in Camden Yards and pitching at the Trop. But yeah, I mean, I like Matt Moore. Is he the one that you alluded to earlier that you really had your eye on?
Nope. We're going to get to that guy. Don't worry. Okay. We're going to get to that guy. I feel like Moore is a good tournament play. He's 7,600. We're going to like a lot of bats in Boston. We're going to like a lot of bats at Coors. We've already mentioned some Toronto bats. So we're going to like a lot of bats here. And 7,600 with strikeout upside, I feel like he's a good tournament play.
Yeah, I mean, especially if I don't know if Harvey's your guy, but if a lot of people are on Harvey, then and he has a bad game, which I expect, then, you know, we can get some nice upside with somebody like Matt Moore, who should be in line for the win.
Yeah, I don't think it's a secret who I like, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. Any bats that you want here? Chris Tillman, a guy that I like to target, but who do we really target him here with the Rays lineup?
I think that where I've been with the Rays this year is they're a team you use with the full stack.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to single out who's going to have a good game. I guess BVP believers could get behind Evan Longoria against Tillman. I think Longoria averages like one home run every seven at bats against Tillman over, you know, more than 50 plate appearances. So it's not a huge sample size, but it's big enough that you can say, you know, he hits the ball hard against this guy. But you know, the Rays, it's, and then if you stack them, how often are the Rays actually going to get 10 runs with a couple home runs? So I like the Rays, but they're tough to use.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, I'm all about the team BVP. And Evan Longoria has 7 home runs and 51 at bats against Tillman and a 1.216 OPS. He hits Tillman very hard. Last time they played and he hit a home run against him, Longoria was really highly owned. For that reason, I don't know, man. Like, he's only 3K, so I'm not saying that I won't play him because he does hit him really hard, but he's going to be highly owned at 3K. Everybody knows that Longoria hits Tillman. It's like everybody knew that Goldschmidt hit Lincecum. And, you know, you get these big BVP numbers, and the guys usually go, you know, pretty highly owned. So, you know, the tournament player in me wants to fade him, but the BVP player in me, like, wants to play him at 3K. So it'd be interesting. I agree with you. It's tough to pinpoint the Rays. If you're playing a one-off guy, Steven Souza's off to a pretty good start here to start the season. And he's maybe the one guy that I would play one-off, maybe Dickerson as well.
Yeah, and Souza buried at like whatever, sixth or seventh in the lineup. Doesn't draw as much ownership attention as he otherwise would. I mean, Tillman might strike him out twice and then give up two bombs to him the other two at-bats.
Yep. Any of these Baltimore bats that you want against Moore?
I can look to Adam Jones just because nobody's on him right now. But, you know, Machado, people will get excited about, quote, Machado against a lefty without realizing that his splits are pretty severe, you know, tilted toward being better against righties. So it's always scary to fade Machado when you know he'll probably be pretty highly owned. But yeah, I think with Arenado and Donaldson drawing attention, ownership will be a little bit lower than it normally would be on Machado. And yeah, it's just not a great matchup for him.
All right. Cincinnati at New York Mets, City Field. Matt Harvey, the dark. Yeah, I don't even want to call him the Dark Knight anymore. He looks awful.
Robin.
Yeah. And John Moscott here. I feel like we could target a lot of bats in this game.
Absolutely. Moscott is, I mean, are we good to skip over talking about the pitchers?
Oh, yeah. There's no pitcher talk here. Like, Harvey looks awful this year. Moscott's a guy that we're going to want to target bats. I don't even think that Harvey's a tournament play in this game.
No, and I've said several times this week that the Reds are a better lineup than people think. Jason Hamill had that really nice game against them, and everybody wanted to jump on board. Their WOBA is super low, but all the underlying numbers say that they're a much better team. They're like third best in baseball at not hitting softly hit balls. Their hard minus soft is in the top of the league. They've just had bad, you know, balls in play luck and home run per fly ball luck. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to go out of my way to pick on the Reds. And Matt Harvey is like a 14% strikeout rate right now. So, yeah, I'm totally fine avoiding him. I don't know how many Reds hitters I'd be comfortable using, but I think a Reds stack in tournaments could be a really interesting way to go.
Yeah, man, I stacked against Harvey a couple times already this season. I've used him a couple times. I've stacked against him. But when you can't go out and you can't dominate a team like Philadelphia and you can't dominate a team like Cleveland, you're going to have trouble here against a team like Cincinnati. So for that reason, not on Harvey. All right, so let's talk about some of the Reds' bats since they're the visiting team here. I like Bruce, Votto, and I've been playing Suarez a ton this season.
Yeah, and Suarez always goes low owned just because there's so much else to like at third base. And what about Cozart? I mean, Cozart's batting like 380, 390 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and in the leadoff spot, definitely.
Like ball play all the time. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like with the Reds lineup. I would love for Tucker Barnhart to play catcher again instead of Devin Mesoraco, but we probably won't be that lucky. But yeah, I mean, it would be tough to put him on like a top one or two or three team I were building, but there's still plenty to like here in this game. And, you know, I wouldn't dissuade anybody from going out of their way to roster some Reds bats on a, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth tournament lineup.
Yeah, we want to note Brandon Phillips didn't play in the Tuesday game. Something with his hand, so he took a hit by pitch in his left hand. Going to want to monitor that. If he's out of the lineup and Ivan DeJesus gets another start, he's only 2,100. Depending on where he hits in the lineup, he might be an interesting punt play at shortstop if you're, you know, fitting in a top pitcher or something like that. Now, let's talk Mets, man. I have a feeling that we're on the same page here and we like some of these Mets bats.
Yeah, I mean, Moscot doesn't strike out left-handed batters at all. He has an xFIP approaching 7 against left-handed batters and a 10% strikeout rate and a 30.6% hard hit rate. And basically everything's put into the air. So it's really, really difficult to not just want to load up on Mets lefties in this. And even going, you know, one way to be contrarian, get some lower ownership would be to go with the full stack, you know, adding in whatever righties are at the top of the order, because, you know, people will pick and choose their lefties that they want to use. But if Moscot gets knocked out early, this could be a bullpen game.
Yeah. And I want to talk about Cespedes. He's missed the last 3 or 4 games. Came into the game on Tuesday night and decided he didn't want to run around the bases too hard. So jacked one over the left field fence. I like the trend to continue. I like if he plays here. He doesn't want to run the bases. His leg's sore. So, you know, he's just going to hit a couple home runs. But anyway, I feel like he's a good play. He's always a tournament upside guy at 4,400. If he's back in the lineup, he was well enough to, you know, hit a home run that probably took less than a second to get out of the ballpark.
Yeah, and you know, another guy that people kind of tend to avoid at times is Curtis Granderson, just because he is so up and down. But against a low strikeout guy, you know, that's where we want to use him, because he should be able to put the ball in play, hopefully all of his at-bats, but if not, you know, all but one at-bat. And when he puts the ball in play, good things can happen, especially with that awesome lineup behind him.
Yeah, and Granderson's a guy with multi-hits in 4 of his last 6 games. He's only 3,600. They're really slow on adjusting his price, and I feel like you can jump on him. Any of these bats before we move on here?
Yeah, I mean, basically everybody in the top half of that lineup, including David Wright. Lucas Duda's an awesome play, you know, especially facing a fly ball pitcher, and he had so many fly balls himself. Neil Walker has been so hot lately. You know, Michael Conforto, the toughest thing on this one would be picking and choosing which guys you want to use, because really any of their top 6 bats are fully in play.
All right. Yeah, we definitely agree there. Mets stacks going to be interesting. Atlanta at Boston. Bud Norris taking on Steven Wright. And I know you're a Red Sox fan as well. So, you know, our Red Sox off to a pretty hot start this season. A lot of bats in this lineup. Steven Wright, very interesting. I'm not a big Steven Wright guy. I stack against him a lot. I don't believe in his knuckleball. What's your thoughts on Wright and Norris in this game?
I actually kind of like Wright as a pitching option today.
Okay.
I mean, it's mostly about the matchup, and it's about the matchup and the weather concerns in Minneapolis and in Chicago that could take us off some of the other pitchers worth considering. But yeah, I mean, there's just so little to like at pitcher today that I don't mind Steven Wright against the Braves lineup that really isn't going to make you pay for mistakes all that often. So their best bat is Freddie Freeman. Fenway Park's one of the worst parks in baseball for left-handed power. So, you know, that takes that threat down a level. And other than that, I mean, what really scares you in that lineup? So I know that it doesn't feel good to think about putting Steven Wright on the roster, but on a day without a ton to like at pitchers, and he's, you know, going to let you fit in a bunch of big bats, he should be able to get the win no problem. I mean, what's the worst he gives up? 2 runs, 3 runs?
Yeah, and he's not going to give up a lot of, if any, home runs, not a lot of home runs. So I can get behind what you're saying here with Wright. So, you know, I understand what you're saying. I just don't like the guy.
Yeah, like, no, that's fair.
Yeah, like, can he really sustain what he's been doing, especially with his strikeout numbers? Like, he's not a guy that's going to average just below a strikeout per inning this season.
And his Sierra is like 4, whereas his ERA is like under 2. So he's not going to keep pitching this well, but, you know, it's not necessarily going to stop against the Braves.
Yeah. And the good thing here is, like, he's 6,900. And you have to think that he's going to be in a good spot to pick up a win because, let's be honest, we're going to like a lot of these Red Sox bats against good old Bud Norris here. Highest WOBA to left-handed bats on the slate and third highest WOBA to righties on the slate as far as pitchers go. Got to like the Red Sox here.
Yeah, everything that gets put in play against Bud Norris is hard hit. Yep. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. He's one of these guys who you stack against him, you know, 3, 4, 5 times, and you might be wrong once, but basically by May or June, you read that he's been designated for assignment, and you're like, oh, I can't pick on him anymore. Like, you see this with these guys who by June have been designated for assignment or sent down to the minors because they've been getting destroyed so much, and we've been picking on them, you know, DFS players every week. So, yeah, I mean, the Red Sox is basically top to bottom one of my favorite plays today. David Ortiz is at a couple days off. Not that he needed it to clear his head or anything, but I do think that can make a difference at time. We saw what Miguel Cabrera did after a day off. We saw what Andrew McCutchen did after a day off. I mean, that's 5 home runs between the two of them after days off. And those guys are both in hitting funks and you know, needed to clear their head. But still, David Ortiz has had a couple days to sit. And, yeah, I mean, I think he can come out and have a really nice game against Bud Norris. He, Hanley Ramirez, Xander Bogaerts, Dustin Pedroia, basically everybody in that lineup.
How dare you not mention Travis Shaw? No.
Man, Travis Shaw. He's going to be batting like 8th again.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. Like, the one thing bad about Ortiz coming back to the lineup, Shaw loses his really nice lineup spot. Would not be shocked to see him hit like 6th in this game. And at 2,800, I think he's in play if he hits. I think he's in play regardless. Everybody that listens to this podcast already knows that I have a man crush on Travis Shaw, so I don't have to kind of hide it. David Ortiz, 3,500 at first base. Man, I hate to say it, and I love, like, trying to guess ownership percentages and, you know, kind of move off people. I don't care what his ownership percentage is tonight. I'm playing him at first base.
Yeah, I said that the other night about Arenado when he had 0 fantasy points. but, yeah, the you know, there's going to be a lot to like at first base, which means ownership will get spread out. It also means that there's plenty else that you could grab that could probably get the same type of points that Ortiz will get. But, yeah, I mean, I love Ortiz. And honestly, back to what you were saying about Travis Shaw, if he's batting 7th, right, which is probably where he'll be, I mean, that's typically where he is, you got to think against Bud Norris, 7th is as good as 2 or 3 on a normal lineup because he's still going to get that 5th at bat, that 4th at bat, that 5th at bat in this game more than likely. You know, the only concern is if they go back to yanking him, you know, in the 6th inning. But if he plays a full game, he should be able to put together another solid game. And honestly, another interesting stack that people don't take advantage of often enough is starting it with Jackie Bradley Jr. in the 9 hole and then wrapping around to the top of the Red Sox order because JBJ at, you know, 5% ownership, which is what he'll be if he's in the 9 hole, 5% or lower, that gives you a lot of upside at really low ownership.
Yeah, and he's hitting the ball very well right now. Milwaukee at Chicago Cubs. This is an interesting game. We really got to pay attention to the weather in this game. We're recording this podcast, like I said, night before. Right now it's showing a little bit of rain concern towards the end of this game. That's why we have Kevin Roth. We'll let him decide what we want to do here with the pitchers and the hitters in this game. If the weather's good, Jake Arrieta, definitely my top option here. I hardly ever pay up for pitching. I'm, you know, a guy that hardly ever will pay over 10K for a pitcher, but I feel like on this slate, the wind's blowing in like 19 miles an hour from right field. He's the guy that I want.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get a win, which is huge on FanDuel. And, I mean, he's allowed 7 runs since last August 4th. It's like 119 innings he's allowed 7 runs. David Price allowed 8 runs in his last start before Tuesday night. Like, that's crazy what Arrieta is doing. And honestly, he's not pitching that well. But he still has his xFIP since in those 119 innings, is 2.46. His strikeout rate is 27%. So, yeah, I mean, there's basically two or three guys in all of baseball who have thrown the ball better than him, you know, over the last 3 months of baseball. So it's tough to not take him against a team like the Brewers, who really need to rely on their power in order to put up runs. And if the wind's blowing in, they're going to have a hard time powering the ball out of Wrigley Field.
Yeah. Man, it's just, even at 12-9, it's tough for me not to play him in this game against the Brewers if the weather's good. But if the weather's not good, I feel like we can pivot all the way back to the first game we talked about. I feel like Gio is a solid guy to fit in if Arrieta has weather concerns. So, Youngman, a guy that has a really high ground ball rate to lefties, going to face a lot of lefties in this lineup. Does that concern you, or are you just going to load up on some of these Cubs bats anyway?
No, that concerns me quite a bit. I'm really, really cognizant of batted ball profiles. So, you know, a guy with over 50% ground ball rate to lefties, that's not accidental. You know, batted ball profiles is one of the most predictive stats. It carries over from season to season, from slate to slate. So I would have a tough time loading up. My hope really would be that a lot of people do load up on Cubs lefties. Probably won't happen with the wind blowing in as heavily as it's predicted to, because people are aware of that as well. But yeah, I mean, it's not a great spot for Cubs lefties, even though Youngman's been getting knocked around. If I'm going to take somebody, I'd rather take Chris Bryant, because people won't be on him. And Youngman allows more fly balls to right-handed hitters, and Chris Bryant could juice one out through the wind.
Yeah, looking at the home run to fly ball ratios, much lower against lefties, like much lower, I think 60-70% lower. So I'm with you on Chris Bryant, and I'm with you on, you know, kind of looking elsewhere on these Cubs bats. And here's the thing about these Cubs, like, they could easily go out and put up 8 to 10 runs. It would not shock me at all, but I just don't know if this is the spot. Is there anybody else you want to talk about before we move on?
I'm trying to think if there's anybody. No, there's nobody on the Brewers to use against Jake Arrieta.
No, no. Like you said, didn't you say like 7 runs since like August? You know, we're not picking on this guy.
Yeah.
New York taking on the Rangers. Shocked everybody that the game did not get postponed on Tuesday night. You're going to want to pay attention to the weather. A lot of issues going on out there, but from what we're seeing right now, it looks like it's going to be fine, and it looks like we're going to play baseball. So what's your thoughts on CC Sabathia and Perez in this game?
I wish the Rangers had more right-handed bats, is my thought. CC is surprisingly still pretty close to elite against left-handed hitters. But he's against righties, he's basically one of the worst pitchers in baseball. So, yeah, I mean, I would pay attention to who's in the top half of the order for the Rangers as far as right-handed hitters. Maybe Elvis Andrews moves up to the one hole. Obviously, Adrian Beltre will be, you know, batting three in the order. So there's plenty to like with the Rangers. Obviously, we're not using either pitcher. So, but yeah, we could look to basically any righty that's batting in the top of the order for the Rangers.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. One Ranger bat outside of Beltre and Andrus, like you said. Ian Desmond's going to take CC Sabathia yard in this game. Going to happen. There's my hot take. I don't know if it's much of a hot take, but there's my call for the home run in this game.
How long has Ian Desmond been hitting the ball well? Because, I mean, I know he had a good game Tuesday night.
For like a week, yeah.
Okay, because I've been just kind of ignoring him for a while now. So, yeah. Now Ian Desmond's he's not a great hitter, but he's a power hitter, and he's a much better hitter than he's been to start the season. So, yeah, I mean, Ian Desmond batting, what, fifth? He could take CC yard, no problem, and probably still get low ownership on him too.
Yeah, and the thing that I like about him as well, like, you know, he's a home run upside guy, but he's also a guy that can steal bases. So I feel like that's something that plays to his favor here. Don't know how much we're going to pick on Brian McCann, but I feel like Desmond's always a guy that can swipe a bag too. Perez, I feel like this is going to be a trend this year, JM. I feel like we're going to see a lot of left-handed pitchers against the Yankees this year.
Yeah, they've been surprisingly bad against Yankees, and I mean against Yankees, against lefties. It shouldn't be that surprising, given how lefty heavy they are. But they built this lineup to have all these switch hitters. Or last year, you know, they could slot in Chris Young when they were facing a lefty, but they just seem kind of lost this year against lefties. And you know, we know Teixeira is better from the left side of the plate, so you know that hurts them a bit. A-Rod's out right now. You know, they got to pick and choose what sit Ellsbury, sit Gardner. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to use Martin Perez. He's an awful pitcher, but there's still plenty to like on the Yankees as far as home run upside. You can grab, you know, a righty in the top half of the order. I would say that Starlin Castro is probably a trap. He'll be batting second, and he hit a home run the other day. He really doesn't have as much power as we want him to have. The home runs are going to be few and far between. So since he hit the home run the other day, I think people will move toward him, which would lead to me staying away. But yeah, I mean, how many runs can the Yankees really put up against a lefty? Probably not that many, even a bad lefty.
Yeah, if Perez had any kind of strikeout upside, I'd be interested in him. He doesn't. I don't like any of these Yankee bats. I'm with you. I don't think Castro's a play for me. I'm moving on. Cleveland at Minnesota. Josh Tomlin. I don't have a picture here for Minnesota. Let me pull that up, and I'll let you.
I thought this was gonna be your pick.
Oh, did you know?
Yeah, it's Jose Berríos.
Who?
Jose Berríos. He's a top 20 prospect. 30% strikeout rate at AAA this year. 27% last year. Does a good job keeping walks under control. Basically he's like a super stud pitcher with massive, massive strikeout upside.
Nice. I did not know that. All right.
Yeah. I don't know if he's available on FanDuel. I know he's available on DraftKings today, but, let me see if we can even roster him on FanDuel.
No, he's not in the player pool on FanDuel.
Man, that's a shame. Yeah. I mean, I like Berríos as an option today because even though it's his first start, I said in my article, basically it'd be like being, I mean, my article today is DraftKings specific, but is, saying basically it's like being able to get, Vincent Velasquez against the Indians at, I think he's 6,900 on DraftKings today. So, you know, that's a pretty fair comp as far as pitcher style and what you can expect. And even though we don't want to necessarily go out of our way to pick on the Indians, if you could get Vincent Velasquez for 6,900 against them, you'd do it. So, yeah, Berríos is an interesting option today.
Yeah, man, I didn't know that about this guy. I didn't even know who he was. So
that's 4 hours of research already put in for this slate.
Yeah, well, he wasn't available on FanDuel, so doing the podcast, I try to stay, you know, FanDuel with like the Fantasy Fix podcast, and didn't even 6,900 on DK. I'm definitely going to look into this guy a lot after the podcast now. Innings, has he been pitching a lot of innings here in AAA?
I haven't gotten that far in looking at him. But, yeah, we could I'll look that up. Do you have any interest in Josh Tomlin?
No, I do not. I just – you know, he's pitched well over the first couple games, and the strikeouts have been there a little bit. And he even limited Detroit last time out, but – I can't get behind Josh Tomlin. I just can't believe in like that he's just going to be so much better against righties than he was last year.
Yeah. I mean, I like Tomlin as a pitcher, a decent amount, but it's funny how these things that don't make sense, like the Twins being a much better offense at home, it doesn't make any sense because it's not like their ballpark just plays great to them or something. But they're a lot better at home. They were last year. Last year they were basically one of the worst road offenses in baseball and one of the best home offenses. So we're seeing that again this year, and I haven't been rostering pitchers against them in Minneapolis.
That's a solid, fair point. So we're going to talk about some of the hitters in this game. You said a lot about that pitcher here for Minnesota. Any of these Cleveland bats that you want to target against them?
No, I mean, I'm willing to stay away. So I looked up pitches. He's thrown 90, 92, and 93 pitches his last three starts. He's gone 5, 5, and 7 innings. So they probably won't let him go over 90 or not too far over 90. But But that still gives you five innings of having to face basically a guy these hitters don't know. And I know that, you know, a lot of times people want to pick on these guys when they're in their first career start. But think about, you know, Jesse Hahn as an example of how dominant he was his first few starts for the Padres a couple years ago, and then how hittable he was after hitters got used to him. So if these guys come up and they're not rattled by the big stage, then they really have a big advantage because these hitters don't know what they're going to see. They don't have as extensive scouting reports on them. You know, the film that they have to watch on these guys isn't as good. So I really like, you know, in tournaments taking, you know, young pitchers in their first or second or third career start, just because I think they have a big advantage. So I'm willing to stay away from Cleveland bats.
Now looking at the Minnesota bats, Miguel Sano is a guy that I love for tournaments. I always feel like he has good upside. It's been hit or miss this season. I'll be honest, I've definitely been burned by him a lot this year, but willing to go back to the well here against Tomlin.
Yeah, I mean, Sano, what's really weird for me with Sano is his ownership is kind of hit or miss. I don't know if it's centered around who talked about him that day and who didn't, or what, because I can't see any other thing that would predict, you know, where his ownership's going to be. But yeah, with so much to like in other games, and obviously we're limited in that we can only roster three outfielders on a lineup. So yeah, I think we'll see Sano at low ownership, and anytime you can get him at low ownership, there's so much upside that it's worth it.
Yep. All right. Let's move it on over, and we're going to talk some Coors Field here. Pittsburgh at Colorado. You know, we don't have to spend a lot of time on the pitchers. It's Nice and it's Gray. We can pick on them, et cetera, et cetera. Give me some bats that you like, and give me some bats that you might fade here.
It's really obviously early to say, because I like to try to take a stance on Coors when I can.
Yeah.
I mean, John Gray has awesome stuff. If you look at his stats on the road, you know, he's talented enough to be an elite pitcher, like a one or two starter on just about any team. But then he has to pitch at Coors Field. So his ground ball rate, again, the only thing that would concern me about the Pirates is Gray's ground ball rate against righties is over 50% at Coors Field. And, you know, he's got good strikeout stuff, 24% strikeout rate at home against righties in his career. So if the ball's not flying out of the park, you know, it could be trouble trying to load up on Pirates righties. So I probably, right now, I'd say I'm going to end up fading Pirates bats, and maybe look at a full-on Rockies stack, or at least pick and choose some Rockies bats against Nice.
Yeah, and I feel like they're coming off a game like the Pirates scored, I think, 9 runs on Tuesday night. So they're coming off a game where they scored a lot of runs at Coors, and they're going to be highly owned again. McCutcheon's ownership is going to be through the roof. You know, I played McCutcheon a lot on Tuesday night, and I feel like, like you said, it's early. I don't want to say fade Coors, of course, because, you know, it's just like a spot where, you know, you want hitters from. But cash games, I feel like you can target some of these guys in tournaments. I think I'm going to pick and choose. One bat that I just want to talk about here real quick is John Jaso. He's 3,600 first base eligibility. Hate that he's first base, but love that he bats leadoff, and his price tag is under 4K for Coors spot.
Yeah, he's really strong in cash games because he's going to get hits. You know, it's like getting a standard leadoff hitter. There's a lot of safety there. It'd be even better if this were the old FanDuel scoring where we get, you know, negatives for outs, because there's just not as many outs with Jaso. But to get a first baseman with so little power just always hurts. And so, yeah, I mean, I would have a hard time going to Jaso. I think I've used him once this year. And, you know, that was when his price was even lower than it is now. So, yeah, Jaso, I wish Gregory Polanco hit a little bit higher in the order because, you know, he'd be in a good spot against John Gray. But with this lineup having so few lefties, I mean, I guess maybe Matt Joyce gets to bat second again, and then we could look there. But But yeah, with this lineup having so few lefties, it's really tough to just go out of my way to roster a bunch of Pirates.
And all right, so let's talk Rockies bats. Nice is a guy. I know you look at ground ball percentage a lot. Over a 50% ground ball rate to righties dating back to last year. 158 inning sample size against righties. That's a pretty high hard ground ball rate.
Yeah, one thing that'll be interesting, and I still have to dig into this for my article, is seeing what basically seeing how Nice induces his ground balls, because there's certain pitches that do a lot better at Coors Field. And so if he's throwing a lot of sinkers that are inducing the ground balls, then he's, you know, likelier to get blown up than if he's just doing it with fastball placement. So, but I do know, I saw that in his career, he has four starts at Coors and has gotten destroyed pretty routinely. So that would have me leaning more toward the Rockies bats. I mean, I said the other day, Nolan Arenado against a lefty at Coors is kind of an auto play, or at least like we said with Donaldson, automatically Arenado should go to the top of your list. And you know, one thing that's interesting about the full stack with the Rockies is there's some lefty bats in there. So people will shy away from those a bit, and you get lower ownership on Coors than you otherwise would.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And, you know, just kind of glancing over the knee stuff, he's throwing his cutter a lot. He throws it at a pretty high percentage, over 20%. So, like you said, it's something that we're going to want to look into. But if he's had four starts at Coors and he's been blown up, sign me up. I'm all about, you know, looking at some of these bats. And we don't need to spend a lot of time on the Rockies. They're in play. St. Louis at Arizona. I feel like this is a game where we have some interesting plays. So let's talk Wainwright and Corbin before we talk about the bets.
So we talked about this before we started recording. But basically that it's interesting that Wainwright is a guy that we can pick on right now. And even more interesting because most people aren't going to want to pick on Wainwright still. We know how that ballpark can play for runs. We know what that Diamondbacks lineup is capable of. And Wainwright's been genuinely bad this year. His Sierra is 5.89. His strikeout rate is under 10%. It should be closer to like 16% given his swinging strike rate, but it's still way lower than anything that would scare you off. And basically, if you look at his hard hit rates, it's just through the roof. Everything's been being hit hard against Wainwright. So, yeah, I mean, the Diamondbacks are surprisingly interesting today.
Now, what's your thoughts on Patrick Corbin?
I don't know. What are your thoughts? I like using righties against Corbin, but the way you introduced that sounded like you were going to disagree with whatever conventional wisdom is.
No, I like all the bats in this game. I want nothing to do with the pitchers. So, okay. Like, no, I wasn't trying to set you up. It's your first time.
We had some knowledge that I didn't have or something.
No, Corbin's a guy that I'm definitely going to pick on. I'm definitely going to pick on Wainwright. So we'll start with the visiting St. Louis Cardinals. Who's a couple bats that stick out to you here?
I'd say Piscotty and Grichuk would be the guys who jump out. First off, and then I don't know. Do we know anything about when Matt Holliday is going to get back in the lineup?
I know he left the game Monday night with a leg injury. I know he didn't play Tuesday night. I don't know much about the leg injury.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see that too. But yeah, I mean, if Holliday plays, he's in play. But, yeah, I mean, Corbin allows – in his career, he's allowed a 33.7% hard hit rate to righties, which is really high. And that's trouble at this ballpark. He's allowed a 12.6% home run per fly ball rate. And, you know, obviously home run per fly ball rate can fluctuate, but this is over 330 innings against righties. So we've had enough time for this to stabilize and to know that this guy gives up a lot of home runs to right-handed bats.
You know he's going to give up a home run too? He's going to give up a home run to Jed Jerko.
Ah, I thought you were going to say Yadier Molina, and I was going to throw a fit.
That's not going to happen.
Now, you know what? Jerko's been hitting the ball well lately, too.
He has.
I kept waiting, like, the last couple of years for him to return to the hitter he was his rookie year, and never happened. Now, all of a sudden, he's not great, but he's got a lot of power. Yeah, Grichuk's, I mean, Jerko's a sneaky play. He'll be batting, what, like seventh?
Well, we'll have to see if Wong, if Wong's not in the lineup, Holiday's not in the lineup, but we could see a bump for him in the lineup, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I like that call a lot, and I like Grichuk a lot in this one just because Corbin's below average in generating strikeouts, which we like with Grichuk, and brings a lot of home run upside for him as well.
So what's your thoughts on this Diaz guy? Like, he's 26 for 54, and, like, the numbers are going to, you know, regress, you have to think, but, dude, he just keeps hitting. Like, as much as I like, all right, he's going to regress, and then he just has a five-hit game. Like, when's the time to jump on him, and when's not? Is this a spot here that you like him?
I was digging into him the other day, just trying to figure out, same as you, what the heck is going on with him, and and I mean, basically where I'm at is he's batting eighth, you know, it's like, and especially in a National League lineup where you have the pitcher behind you, you don't have that protection. It's really tough to roster a National League hitter batting eighth. I mean, yeah, I guess as a tournament play, it's interesting. I don't think I can jump on board until he moves somewhere else in the order.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how this lineup kind of shakes out here in this game. Hazelbaker got the start for Holiday. If Holiday's out again, Wong's dealing with an issue right now as well. It's just going to be interesting. You're really going to want to see what the Cardinals lineup looks like when it comes out. And if one of these guys that we mentioned, you know, gets a lineup bump, it might be time to jump on him. But I feel like we can jump on Wainwright. So let's talk about some of these Arizona bats. I'm all about Team Peralta and Team Jake Lamb. What's your thoughts on Arizona here?
Yeah, I mean, basically anybody in the lineup is in play. Peralta's splits against righties at home are just insane. Basically, if he played all of his games at home against righties, he'd be one of the top five hitters in baseball. So, yeah, I mean, I like Peralta a lot in this one. Maybe Goldie will go a little bit lower owned since he's, you know, facing a righty instead of a lefty. And since Wainwright's name is still on this matchup. But yeah, I think there's a lot of sneaky upside here, and I think this is an interesting place to look to kind of move away from some of the high ownership that we'll see, and obviously at Coors, but then also at the Rogers Center and even at Fenway Park.
I agree. I'm all about the game stack here. I feel like it's going to go under-owned. I'm all over it. Kansas City, Los Angeles Angels. Oh, man. All right. I feel like we've talked about maybe like three pitchers we liked on this slate. And I don't feel like they're going to come from this game. Chris Young, Nick Trapino. I can't get behind either one of these guys either.
Yeah, it's not a great slate for pitching. We still haven't gotten to your big guy yet. So
we're getting there.
But yeah, I mean, Chris Young is basically the Angels have finally started hitting the ball well. Last year they had pretty extreme splits between home and road, and they're at home right now and have been hitting the ball well. Like as we're speaking, Johnny Giovatella just hit a home run. So if Giovatella's hitting home runs and Albert Pujols got a single, what's that all about? A hit that wasn't a home run, then they're kind of starting to click a little bit. So typically Chris Young, you know, a fly ball pitcher with that great outfield defense that he has and in a great ballpark wouldn't be a bad place to look. But with the way the Angels have been hitting the ball, you know, I don't want to go there. And I'd be likely to just lean toward bats against Chris Young.
Yeah. I don't know how many bats I'm going to target against Chris Young in this game, but I'm with you. Chris Young's a hard guy to kind of pinpoint because, like, everything says that Chris Young should be really bad and give up a lot of home runs, and somehow at the end of the day, like, he doesn't. So it's really tough for me to pinpoint. Like, look at his last game. I know it because I stacked so many Baltimore bats against him last game, and he struck out 10 guys. So it's just – it's so frustrating sometimes with Chris Young, but – who are some bats you like in this game?
I guess I would go Albert Pujols just because he has two home run upside and most people won't be on him. And then the Royals, I mean, I've maybe rostered – I guess I've rostered Mike Moustakas a few times this year, but Lorenzo Cain once or twice. But it's really tough to roster Royals bats just because they kind of just single and double their way to victory. And so there's not a ton of, you know, all at once upside, which is what you're really looking for in tournaments.
Yeah, I don't like a lot of bats here. If I had to, one guy is Moustakas, man. He just continues to mash. So if there's one guy I'm going to target in this game for the most part, it's going to be Moustakas. Everybody knows that, like Hosmer. I don't even know if this is the spot that I'm going to target Hosmer in.
So it looks like Moustakas hit another home run on Tuesday night. So there's that against Jared Weaver's 82-mile-an-hour fastball.
Is it that hard now?
Yeah, he's gotten up to 84 on some of his pitches, I think.
Oh, so, man. Don't guess.
It's like a Tim Wakefield fastball. I don't know. Yeah, it's tough to roster Royals for me, and I'm fine just staying away from them, honestly.
Miami Marlins have taken on the Los Angeles Dodgers. Scott Kazmir said, thumb's fine. He's going to be fine to pitch in this game. And we got Justin Nicolano. I probably murdered that name, so it is what it is.
I would guess Nicolino, right?
Yeah, that works.
I heard them say it earlier tonight, but I forget how they said it. But yeah, he doesn't strike out anybody. That's what we need to know about him.
Yeah, that's all we need to know.
12% strikeout rate against lefties in his career, 6% strikeout rate against righties in his career, and that's through 59 innings against righties. 59 is a pretty big sample size to have a 6% strikeout rate.
Yeah. Oh, man, I like the Dodgers a lot in this game. I feel like I say that all the time. I probably play Dodgers more than I play anybody else, but I feel like this is another spot that we can look at Dodger bats. What's your thoughts on Scott Kazmir here?
I don't trust Scott Kazmir. I mean, Martin Prado's back. He's great against left-handed pitchers. Obviously, Giancarlo Stanton took Kershaw yard tonight. He can do the same thing to Kazmir. I can't get behind Kazmir right now.
Dude, Stanton loves hitting at Los Angeles. Like, it's his hometown, and, like, his stats at Dodger Stadium were just insane.
Yeah, maybe he'll double dong against Kazmir, and somehow we can get low ownership on that.
All right, well, don't tell anybody that Stan's really good.
Edit that out.
All right, let's talk some of these. You mentioned Martin Prado. I think he's in play. Stanton, obviously, is in play. Nobody else that I really want outside of maybe Real Muto. Like, he's off to a pretty good start this season.
Yeah, what I really like about Real Muto is he has stolen base upside, which you don't usually get from a catcher, but he's probably not going to steal against a lefty. He doesn't have a ton of power. Real Muto is in play. Basically, you could stack the Marlins and hope for the best. But Stanton is one of the main guys I'm going to be trying to fit into my lineup or lineups tonight. Because I love his spot against Kazmir.
You mentioned, like, this guy doesn't strike out a lot of bats. Dodgers have a pretty good lineup if we want to talk about it, you know. 1-5, 6, and maybe a one-off play with Jock Peterson. I feel like the Dodgers are in play here.
Yeah, and we should have Kike Hernandez should be batting 1 or 2 because Nicolino's a lefty. So Kike Hernandez
is a lefty.
Yeah, he's a lefty. And he – Kike let me down the other night against Wei-Yin Chen, but still, I mean, his wOBA against lefties is like over 450 in his career. It's baseball, anything can happen, but against a lefty who gets a 6% strikeout rate, you got to like Kike Hernandez a lot in this one.
Yeah, and I feel like we got to like Puig, and you know who didn't let me down in that game the other night against Chen? Trace Thompson. I talked about this guy for like 5 minutes the other night against Chan on the podcast. And like, he is like so close to being a 25 plus home run guy. Like, he has a lot of power and he's probably 2 seasons away from doing that, but he has massive upside in this game against the lefty.
Yeah. I mean, batting seventh. That's what he was batting the other night, right?
Yeah. I don't even care. I'm playing him for upside.
Yeah, that was how I ended up not on him, was because of him, his spot in the batting order, and then obviously was regretting it heavily once he went yard. There's plenty to like in this Dodgers lineup. And basically, you know, you can look and say who's batting in the top 5, 6, 7 spots in tournaments and load up, hope for the best.
Last game on the night, Houston at Seattle. I'll let you talk about these pitchers first.
Like, really? This is where we're going? I mean, I can't imagine who it is that you love on this. Iwakuma hasn't been pitching that well. Colin McHugh has started pitching better, but I don't know. I don't want to pick on either of these lineups. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I actually like McHugh in this game. And it's crazy. Like, he's the guy that I'm probably going to have way too much ownership in tournaments. Like you said, been pitching a lot better. Even when he was getting shelled this season, you know, the swinging strike rate is still kind of where he's been at throughout, you know, the two or three seasons that we've seen him. And, like, the hard contact rate is so low. The ground ball rate is actually up this year. The line drive rate, I feel like, will kind of come back to normal, and the ground ball rate will probably come back to normal a little bit. But, you know, he limits the hard contact to lefties and righties, and this is a lineup I feel like he can get through. And he's pitching in a really good ballpark here.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't sell you. That's fine.
It's okay. You don't want to sell people too heavily because, you know, then they'll roster him and be competing against you with that. Yeah, I mean, his lowest xFIP of the year was 3.62 against Detroit. There is a now I forget what it is. I was looking at this a couple weeks ago. There's a new pitch he started throwing for, I think it was like the last nine games of last year. It might be a two-seamer or maybe it's a cutter. I think it's a cutter that he never threw before, and then he started throwing it for the last nine games of last year and then has been throwing it this year, and it's been an effective pitch. So, yeah, I mean, I don't hate McHugh, but I'm not on him like you are, especially because with going against Iwakuma, we have the, you know, Iwakuma can get blown up where he can shut down a lineup. And if he shuts down a lineup, then it's going to be really tough for McHugh to get the win.
Yeah, on the other side of this bold call, I really like the Houston bats in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think Houston, especially anytime you can get him at low ownership, is interesting. You got to love Houston because not only do they hit home runs, but they steal so many bases. Like, just their upside top to bottom is so high. Yeah, anytime you can get them, you know, under 6-8% owned, it's worth doing.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm all about some bold calls. When you're a tournament player, you know, you take chances. Built up a good bankroll where I can take chances, and this is a chance I'm going to take here. I'm going to take a shot on McHugh and some of these Houston bats, and it might not pay off for me. And if it does pay off for me, I don't expect them to be more than 5% owned on this slate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go the pairing of McHugh and Houston bats, you're going to be on super low ownership to where if that goes off, you know, you're in the money automatically.
Now, you said you didn't like a lot from this game. Is there anybody you want to mention before we wrap it up here?
No, I don't think anybody that we haven't covered already. Let me just check real quick on my trusty list of pitchers I want to pick on today. Yeah, we got to everybody pretty well.
All right, and my favorite part of the podcast is the home run derby portion here. Siege really helped out the co-host, like, guest spots because he had McCutchen yesterday. So, you know, I still got two last night, but he got another one up on me. It's like 8-6 I'm up on, you know, co-hosts here. So I'm gonna be, you know, generous. I'm going to let you have first pick here.
Okay. So we're going to start out with something that's not going to surprise anybody, and then we'll go a little more contrarian with my second pick. We're going to start out with Bryce Harper against Jeremy Hellickson.
All right. That didn't shock anybody. Yeah, I'm going to stick with my number one play price per dollar on the slate, and that's David Ortiz. He's a guy that I'm going to live or die by Ortiz in this game and against Bud Norris. I almost called him Dud Norris. All right. And I'm going to go chalky with my second pick and go Arenado here.
Okay. Well, you just picked up a point right there. So
yeah, I'm locked into two here.
I'm going to go with, it's unnecessary to be this far off the board, but I'm going to go with Martin Prado against Scott Kazmir.
Don't worry. I got one off the board for you on my last pick, but I'll let you have your last one here.
Last one. Let's go with Kike Hernandez squaring off against the lefty Nicolino.
I like it. I like it. I like it. My last one, I said it's going to be bold, and it's Jay Bruce against Matt Harvey.
Ooh, there we go. I like that.
So
you get like 2% ownership there. Is it the dad narrative? Is that what you're playing off of?
I'm just playing off Harvey hasn't looked good, and Bruce has shown some upside and some power numbers this year.
Well, he's just getting back from paternity leave, right? So
yeah, that's first game being back. Oh, yeah.
He'll have some dad strength going.
He should be back, right? Like, I swear it's like 2 days.
Yeah, it's been 2 days. You get between 1 and 3, so it depends on how much he loves his wife and child.
Yeah, well, if he doesn't play, then I'll take Votto. I'll take one of these guys against Harvey.
Okay, there we go. I'm hoping it's Bruce, just so that we can have the dad game narrative.
Yeah, we love all about the narratives. All right,
T.Y. Hilton dad game narrative a couple years ago?
Oh, my gosh. Like, he went absolutely ham.
And then he didn't play, like, the rest of the game, like the fourth quarter or something.
Yeah, like, I wanted Jake DeGrom dad narrative the other day, but, like, they said he was going to limit his pitches, and I was like, oh, man. All right, last segment before we get out of here, JM. One pitcher you feel like at the end of the night is going to have a win in their FanDuel column. Doesn't have to score the most fantasy points, but a guy that you feel is going to pick up a win here.
Steven Wright.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good call. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I really like your Steven Wright call. So I can get behind that. It would be way too easy to go Gio Gonzalez. Like, I feel like he's definitely going to get the win here. But I'm going to go McHugh. I'm going to stick to my bold call. I'm going to say McHugh gets the win at the end of the night.
I hope you win a tournament with McHugh as your starting pitcher.
If I win a tournament with McHugh, you're joining me every day. JM,
the boldest of bold calls every day.
It was a pleasure for you to join me here on the podcast. Hope we can do it more this season. Which days do you write the incentives article for RotoGrinders?
Monday and Thursday is FanDuel specific, and Tuesday and Wednesday is DraftKings specific. So 4 days a week, premium subscribers for both sites get all four. But if you subscribe to one site, you get FanDuel a couple days a week with Cheese is Good, two-time $1 million winner taking the other 3 days. And then DraftKings, I got Tuesday and Wednesday, and STL Cards takes the other days.
All right, man. You can't go wrong with any of those three guys. Plus, you get the new ECRs where you were ranking guys point per dollar, and you can get, you know, 6 to 8 experts on FanDuel and DraftKings every day, kind of see who everybody likes. JM, it was a pleasure. You guys make sure you check out his articles. It's JM to win on Twitter.
Yeah, JM to win on Twitter.
Make sure you guys are following him over there. That's going to wrap it up here for the podcast on this wonderful Wednesday. We'll be back on Thursday. Got a special guest for the first time on the podcast this year. We're going to have a female joining us tomorrow. So make sure you guys are paying attention to that. And Valencia has a couple live finals, and she's going to join me on Thursday. JM, thanks for joining me. And we will see you guys on Thursday.